play.
Mm-hmm. This is Jennifer Caldwell's Oral History Project. It's March 30th, 1995, and I'm interviewing Willie Mae Caldwell in her home in Stockbridge, Georgia.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'd be happy to tell you everything I can remember. Been many a year since it started before the war, but I can remember back 1935, 1936, when the Social Security was started. The salaries were very low. We had hardworking people. Everybody was really content and happy. We wasn't afraid. We didn't have a lot of crime. And when I worked with the telephone company, and I worked with a long-distance outward operator, I was a long-distance outward operator, and they really cautioned us. We had tight security. This was after the war had started. Because of the tight security, we had to be fingerprinted and everything, because they said of the communication problem there, that if the enemy attacked, that would be the first place to be bombed and cut off from the world, because cut off from the world anyway. But during the war, we had people working in defense plants, and we had to have ration stamps to get shoes and sugar and gas and tires. And if you had a car, and I don't care how much money you had, you could not get the gas unless you had special ration tickets. And you had to be a very important person, or a person that had to, their job was very critical to the war or to the defense of our country. And everybody worked closely together. And you go to the grocery store, and you had to have ration stamps to get butter and margarine. Even if you could find it, sometimes they would stand in line for a long time when a certain store would get it, where you could get it. And canned milk was rationed, and it was safe for babies, really. And I was fortunate enough to have a store that saved canned milk for the formula for my oldest child that was born during the war. And her daddy was already overseas fighting the Japanese. And
so where did you live here in Georgia?
Yeah. Yes, so we lived here in Georgia. I lived in Atlanta, but I also went to stay with my husband in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Leroy Caldwell. He was stationed at the Air Force Base there. He was in the Air Force, and we lived there, and we had to ride the bus, the train, and the soldiers got to ride first. If you got on, if there was not a seat, you had to stand up. And the soldiers got to go. I mean, they were everywhere. The people were real good, though. They had USOs and things like that for the soldiers.
So, who was the president?
Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the president, and we were helping England, because Hitler was taking over. I mean, he was ruling Germany. Hitler was ruling Germany, and then he was bumming Europe. He really was, and we was helping out England, because they were going bumming them, and we were just lending them supplies and money and everything to help them out. And Hitler, then December the 7th, 1941, of course, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and then we got into full-scale war. And we just, and it was you listened for it was a trying time because you always was listening for the Western Union person to come blow the whistle and tell you your loved one was dead or missing in action, things like that. And I had three. My husband was in the service. I had a brother that was in the service, and I had a brother that was in the Navy. Had three brother-in-laws that was in the service. My husband was in the Air Force, and my oldest child was born while my husband was overseas. He didn't get to see her till she was 13 months old. But we were fortunate because a lot of men didn't get back to see their children. And we had some dear, dear friends that was killed and wounded in the war. I have a cousin that was injured. He was with Patton in the tank commander in Germany, and he got wounded. He got his leg shot, and then he got to come home, but he's still suffering with that wound today. But the people in the United States, everybody worked together. We had really a lot of harmony here, and everybody worked together for the benefit of each other, for the benefit of the freedom of our country. And we wasn't, you know, scared of anything. The main thing we were all afraid of really was listening for the news that our loved one had been injured or missing in action. And you couldn't buy tires, you couldn't buy, not everyone had cars. Very few people had cars. And then after the war, people had the money, but they had started making cars again. Because, see, they quit making cars during the war because of they made things for fighting, you know, like they made the Jeeps, they built the Jeeps and all those trucks and things like that. And they did make some cars, but not for civilians. Mm-hmm. And then civilians, you had to put in your order for cars, and they didn't cost very much when you got a new one. They're about $1,300-$1,400.
So did y'all get a new car?
No, we didn't get a new car, and you couldn't even buy washing machines or anything. And if you didn't have a washing machine before the war started, you didn't get a washing machine till after the war, because most of the washing machines were the wringer type, mm-hmm. you know, where you washed and had the wringer type defense plant. Mm-hmm. And Lockheed, they built planes, and there was a lot of people that worked at fire.
Was it mostly women that worked there?
No, there was some men that was not able to go, and some people were deferred from the war because they were critical to work in those defense plants. The people that knew how to work in the defense plants, some of the leaders, they were deferred out of the service, you know. But during the war, when I traveled to be with my husband, you would see family, you would see women with children going to visit and live with their husband, and the children wouldn't have anywhere to sleep, anything. They'd be traveling and have to change buses and everything, and they'd be sleeping on the bathroom floors in the bus terminals and in the train stations and things like that. And you never went anywhere where there wasn't. You go to the terminal station in Atlanta, which has already been destroyed now. It's been destroyed, but it was always soldiers, sailors, Marines, and was always, it was always there. They were always there, and everybody was, when you traveled, if you saw someone hitchhiking, a soldier, a sailor, a marine, if they was in the service, you would stop and pick them up because you knew they was going to be good, you know, they was going somewhere. And like I say, when I worked at the telephone company, we had to work 7 days a week. In fact, if they needed you to work, they even had a place for you to sleep and a place for you to eat if they needed you to work.
So you weren't there even when you had your first child?
No, I had already quit, and because I went to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Okay.
And because that was before Leroy was transferred back to Macon and then back to overseas. But I went there, and I worked in a grocery store there, and you had to keep up with all the ration stamps. If any kind of meat that was bought, except maybe fish and shrimp and stuff like that, you had to have a ration stamp for it. And you had to account for that. For every bit of meat that you had and you sold, you had to account. You had to have a ration stamp for it. And every pair of shoes that you bought, you was allotted so many stamps to get your shoes. And when you used that stamp, you didn't get any more shoes. That was just it. Didn't have a closet full of shoes like we have now. I've got 50 pairs in there now, and back then you was lucky to get one pair, you know. But
what year did your husband enter the war?
He entered the war in 1942, June 5th, 1942. And we wasn't married at the time. We married October 5th, 1942. And he went into the Air Force. And he was stationed in several places. He was stationed in Myrtle Beach, Savannah, and he was also stationed at Macon, Warner Robins. In fact, he was working when he went to... when he went in the service, he was working, helping build Warner Robins when he quit fire and went into the service, because he was going to have to go anyway unless he got a deferment for being. He could have, because it was very critical that they get all these places built. He decided that he didn't want to stay and work in the defense plan. He just thought that it was better for him that he would just go on in the service and serve like all of his buddies were going in, you know, and he just thought he would too. And so he did, and then he went to, he was in China and India, and he flew over the hump in India. He was, they would start over the hump, and they would have to, sometimes to get over the hump, it was so high, they would just have to push out everything they started over the hump with, like a jeep, the jeeps and the tanks and things that they carried on the plane. Sometimes they'd even have to pull out the instruments in the airplane so they could fly over, and said you could even see, said you didn't have to have a navigator or anything to fly over the hump, because you could see where they had pushed those things out of the planes, you know. And it was very hot over there, and he fought the Japanese a long time, and they built some airports, and they were building an airport in China, I believe it was China, and he said that they were bombing the other end of the airport runway, and they were, mm-hmm. you know, building the runway. And everybody back then was real concerned about each and every person. It didn't seem like they were like they are now. Everybody seems like they're selfish, or I don't think about the freedom of our country, and they don't realize what the boys did and how our boys suffered and was proud to mm-hmm. go over there and fight for our country.